Hi, guys. My name's Kyle, and I'm a grateful recovering meth addict and alcoholic. So today is my four-year birthday. Today is the day. And, I love Miles. So I promised some of you guys yesterday that I was going to tell you a Mother's Day story, and I thought I'd go ahead and open up with it because May 12th, 2015, I had to Google what day Mother's Day was in 2015. I haven't had to do that in a while, but it was May 10th, and so it makes this story all the more real. And so what happened was I had gone through one treatment center, and then Cinco de Mayo came around, and I felt the need to have a margarita because I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I thought I was a meth addict. And, and then I just spun off because that's what I do today. I'm glad to know that I am an alcoholic today. But on May 10th, it was a Sunday, and I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon after, being on a four-day bender. And I went to my local, 7-Eleven, but it was more like a 6-10, it was one of those, and it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I remember getting, some butane, obviously, and, some cigarettes and some Reese's sticks, 'cause that was like my special food, and, two tall boys of Old English and a Slurpee. Like a Slurpee, because I didn't really get Slurpees. But I knew that guy kind of well, right? Because those people at the gas station, because it's open 24 hours a day, and they, see you at your worst, right? And so I'm paying, and I'm, literally just dead to the world. And as I pay my money, he says, "Hey, happy Mother's Day." And I had no idea it was Mother's Day. I mean, I had no idea. When he said it, it kind of pissed me off. First of all, you don't know if I have kids. But most of all, it was made me very mad at myself because what it made me realize was that I'd been living my world in such a way that I didn't even know that it was Mother's Day. How could that be, Before I came up here today, I was lucky enough to have my daughter, my son, my mom, my in-laws, my husband, a house full of people, and my dog, my lovely Abraham. But my point is that, again, 4 years clean today, and I can't believe that just 4 short years ago, I didn't even know it was Mother's Day. It just blows me away. And so I'm thankful for that. I'm so grateful today to know what Mother's Day really feels like, because I can't say that I did when I was in my addiction. So what I can say is I was born in Alabama. I don't like to tell too many people that, but it's true. I was born in Alabama, 1975, Fort Rucker. And I grew up with, my parents were hippies. I don't know if y'all can tell, my mom's kind of still a hippie. But my name is Kyle Omeo Walker. So there was a whole lot of peace and love, going on, growing up. But, I was always different. I hit 6 foot at 13. I don't know if y'all have noticed, but I'm 6'2". So I hit 6 foot at 13. And let me just tell you, that was back when kids weren't tall. Today kids are tall. I don't know if y'all noticed that, but when I was a kid, I was 2 feet taller than everybody. And I wasn't thin. I was a big old girl, 13, this size, basically 13. So it was rough, man. I also had, suffered from a whole lot of body image issues because I didn't look like the girls looked. I remember when I was in middle school, I refused to wear pants because I didn't have a space in between the top of my legs. I know that sounds, but that's what I thought you had to have in order to wear, tight pants. I didn't know there was another way. But I found out really early on, that my size could intimidate people. And, my initials spell cow, also another thing that I don't like to tell many people. But so I had kids mooing behind me, you know, until I was strong enough to punch one of them in the face. His name was Quincy. I remember him now. But what I'm trying to say is, like, I learned early on that that I was different, you know, and my childhood was, you know, it was not a bad childhood, but there was a lot of moving around. There was a lot of moving around. I mean to tell you, like, you know, I went to so many schools, and, you know, fitting in when you're just a normal kid is one thing, but fitting in when you're like a gawky 6 foot tall, doesn't play basketball, mind you, don't play basketball. So I got really involved in bands, and I got really involved in school. I loved school because it was something to do, you know? And it wasn't until I hit 16, I remember my mom used to smoke cigarettes and I would flush them down the toilet and it would piss her off because I didn't want to, I was really trying to be clean cut, I guess. But I wasn't. When I was 16, I think I smoked cigarettes, smoked weed, and smoked meth all within the same 30 days. And I went to live with my dad when I was 16 years old and moved to Dallas. And when I hit Dallas, for some reason, so I lived with my mom in a 700 square foot, no central heat and air house, you know, where like the whole house shared one car, not really, but there was no car for me to drive. And then I move in with my dad, who's an engineer and has money. And he's like, here's a car. And I just went crazy. You know, I just went crazy. All of a sudden I had all this freedom. And I started drinking and I started smoking and it went downhill really, really quickly. In between my junior year and my senior year, my dad moved to California, and that's where the drug addiction really took off. When I was in San Diego, first of all, I showed up my first day of my senior year of high school in Daisy Dukes. And I was known as Texas from that day forward because like people in California are like 3 years ahead of us, like fashion wise. And I didn't know that. And so I show up in what is like badass in Dallas, but it was not cool in San Diego. So I automatically didn't fit in, except for with the people who smoked weed and skipped class and sold dope. And then I found out, you know, that I had enough, because I had been such a nerd, I had enough credits to graduate. So then I'm only going to class 1 hour a day, right, for the first semester. And then I got in trouble, you know, that went on. I got in trouble for selling weed to a teacher on camera. And, yeah, and so basically they told me that I was, I needed to leave. But I had enough credits to graduate. I didn't find that out for about 3 years. But anyway, I did leave. And then I just was 18 years old, 17 years old, sorry, not even 18, 17 years old in California. And I just went crazy. I started doing meth a whole lot. And I joke sometimes that like I haven't even really been high since I got here from California, because the dope in Southern California is like so different. And so I'll never forget like some of the crazy things that happened. I got in with some people that were stealing cars and, just not doing great things. And I started being away from my dad's house, for weeks at a time. And at one point I showed back up to my dad's house to, you know, like sleep and get some money and just show my face. And there was one of those real estate lock boxes on the, my dad had moved. He had to Australia. I am not shitting you. You can ask my mom. Like, I literally go home to my dad's house and he was like, fuck that truck, you know? and come to find out, like, when I made amends to my dad and my stepmom recently, within the last year, what they told me is they didn't know how to get in touch with me. You guys have to understand, this is 1991, 1992. You know, the cell phones are still this big. Like, you know what I mean? People still have pagers. There is no Facebook. It was just, so there was no getting in touch with me and letting me know that he had gotten a transfer, you know? So he and my sister and my stepmom packed up and moved to Australia. So there I am in Southern California with nothing, man, you know, except for, you know, a boyfriend and a truck and a bunch of friends. And I will say that I ended up moving to a city called Julian just outside of San Diego and cooking dope with a boyfriend and his sister and his sister's, anyway, his name was Gallo Medialdea. I'll never forget. But my mom, about 3 months into me living in Julian, she knocks on the door. No Facebook, no cell phones, no nothing. My mom finds my ass in Julian, California. And I'll never forget, I was like so happy she was there, but it was so weird because like I didn't expect for my mom to come get me. She lives in Texas. You know what I'm saying? I haven't talked to her in like a year. And she just shows up. And I'll never forget, I left fairly easily. I think I was pretty excited. But we're driving away, and I'll never forget, I was like, Mom, do you have a joint? And she was like, I can't smoke a joint with you. I was like, you literally just picked me up from a cookhouse and you will not smoke a joint with me. And she's like, well, I guess. So we did. So driving away, I will never forget. I never needed a joint so bad in my life. That was the first time my mom ever smoked a joint with me, but I needed it so badly. And I'll never forget. So I get to the airport, you know, like 2 or 3 days later, my mom tells me my cat died. I mean, there's all this fucking, you know, drama going on because my cat was my cat. I loved my cat. But we get to the airport and she buys my ticket. And it hit me at that moment that my mom had no idea that I was even going to come home with her. You know what I mean? And then come to find out later that like people were like, no, 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 you know, telling her, you know, you're a dumbass to go to California. Like, you don't know what your kid's into. And she did. And she did anyway. And so I'm just really thankful that she did that because I don't know where I'd be today, you know. But I will say I got back to Austin and I immediately found dope again. Because you know what? When we're looking for it, right, we'll find it. We're some resourceful motherfuckers. I mean to tell you. And immediately I found dope in Austin. And, you know, played the game, acted like I wasn't using, and was able to maintain for most of my adult life. So I had this like huge arc of usage, right? I would drink, and I love malt liquor, y'all. Oh my God. I like had this whole rationalization that like my body actually like was just meant to drink Old English malt liquor. Cause I felt like it was part of my bloodstream. Like I was that dumb bitch. I loved it warm. I loved it flat. I didn't care. I just loved it. But you know, but that makes you fat cause it's got a lot of calories in it. And so what would happen is I'd drink. And then I'd start getting heavy and I'd start feeling bad about myself again, 6'2", you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. And I remembered that whole meth smoking thing, because you can lose 30 pounds in 30 minutes. It's a fact. And I would start smoking meth and I would lose weight and everything would be fine on the outside, you know? And you sprinkle in a marriage and a kid and jobs. I've got this arch going all the time. And I managed to keep my shit together for years, you know, together. What I know now is that I wasn't really living. I was just surviving, you know? I was basically living to just be fucked up. I literally thought that the whole purpose of life, of adulthood, was to be as fucked up as possible, to have as much pleasure as possible, but still keep that facade of the white picket fence and the Girl Scouts and the YMCA and the camps and the blah, blah, blah. But I was not there for any of it, you know? God bless my daughter. I just wasn't present for any of it. I was always worried about getting fucked up. I can't, you know, Chris says something that really resonates with me. And he says, you know, I wasn't present for most of my addiction. And that hits home with me. I've had my daughter say things like, I've had David say things like, don't you remember that birthday party we had at the YMCA? And I'm like, I have have no clue, guys. And it was like a joint birthday party, right? Between, yeah, exactly. So my point is, I don't remember it. I've had my daughter say, don't you remember when I did sign language, the whole Star-Spangled Banner at a freaking homecoming game? And I'm like, you know, I don't. So, and that's okay. You know, I'm really thankful today that I'm not what I've done. You know, I am more than the sum of my worst, the worst things that I've done. Because really what I was trying to do was I was just trying to like make it, you know, I was just doing the best I could do, at the time with the tools that I had. And I think that a lot of you guys can probably, get down with that. Like, you know what that's like. I tell people that I most recently was by way of Houston. So I lived in Houston from 98 until I got clean in 2015. That's where I met David, and that's where I had Jasmine and Elias both. But fast forward, you know, if you want to hit rock bottom really quick, I'm just telling you right now, start shooting meth. Because, man, that will get you there really quick. So I totally like could maintain that semblance, you know, of normalcy, basically, whenever I was smoking dope or when I was snorting dope. But the second I started banging dope, shit gets weird. You know what I mean? It just gets weird. It just does. Like, shit gets weird. And you know, it's interesting because I always managed to have a full-time job. I always managed to take care of things. But what happened was I started getting real resentful. I started getting pissed off that I was leaving six people at my house, you know, soaking up my air conditioning that I had a pink slip for, you know, and I was having to figure out how to pay for that. And I started getting real angry at the fact that I couldn't be high the way everybody else was high. You know, and it really pissed me off. And so I thought that the more control I had over my house and the dope and the money and the this, that that somehow was the answer. And it wasn't. It made me insane. And by the way, I have two children living at home dealing with all of this. And while I never was up, you know, I never like got high in front of my kids. What I did was I had that bedroom door closed all the time. And that is not something that I'm happy about. It's not something I'm proud of, but it's the truth. And I'm really thankful today that I can stand up here and say, that's not who I am. You know, that's who the dope made me. And I was super happy to be that way at the time. But it really did a number on our children. So, you know, like I said, things get weird. David goes to jail in late 2013, I think, December 2013. And I'm on the phone with him during the high-speed chase because, you know, that's what tweakers do. I literally am on the phone with him as he's crashing my car, like, you know, and I'm like watching the news. Oh, my God. And I'm at work, of course, because that's what I do. And trying to find the car, and he got, you know, it was like felony evading arrest, possession, blah, 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 and all that stuff. Now, what I didn't tell you is just before he got put in prison, I sent our kids at two different times to live with my mom in Austin, here in Austin. There were some really bad things that were happening. You know, David and I were both extremely sick. We were living in a really sick house. We were just not good for each other at that time. And I didn't feel like I could protect myself or my kids. And also they were kind of cramping my style, quite frankly. So I was really trying to be able to do dope the way I wanted to do dope. And so I sent, first Jasmine to live with my mom, and you know, it was only a matter of time before CPS made that decision for me. Unbeknownst to me, my mom had actually somehow managed to like gather hair follicles. Yeah. So she already knew I was high. And like shit was about to happen, but you know, I'm real big on like being able to tell right before stuff blows up, and I just, okay. So I did that with, Jasmine. And then about 2 months later, I did the same thing with Elias. David and I were getting evicted. So, of course, I thought it was a great idea to let my first husband move us out. God, not a good idea. So he was in the whole, he liked to make extra keys of U-Hauls, and then you'd turn in the U-Haul in my name, and then you'd steal that motherfucker later. Yeah. That was not good. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't do stuff like that. You know, like, I literally think, oh, he's coming to help his daughter. You know, nope. He was totally trying to steal my, my good name and good credit. So I am a member of the You Can Never Rent a U-Haul Ever Again Club. Yeah. And I'm also a member of the You Can Never Set Foot at a Public Storage Club. That's a whole nother story. But let's just say that, you know, right around that same time, you know, right before I sent Jasmine to live with, my mom, you know, Jasmine asked me, I'll never forget it. She said, hey mom, she goes, because her dad was singing in our garage. Cause you know, that makes sense. and she's like, hey mom, is my dad a pimp? And I said, well, we like to call him a hotector. Like, that really happened. I may even have it on video on Brittany's phone. Oh, my God. But it happened, and it was a thing, and it was not good, is my point. None of it was good, and I thought it was normal. So what happened was David went to jail. I started feeling like I could be the best drug dealer that I could be. It was the beginning of a very dark time, you know. I couch surfed. I lived with a bunch of people. I had people sell me cars and then they'd steal them from me. Like, you know, that kind of tweaker shit. And then I was able to get an apartment that I shared with three gay guys, because that's also something we do, a one bedroom apartment. And it was not good. Just none of it was good. What happened was I started selling heroin to support my meth habit. And I've talked about that quite a bit because, you know, meth is really hard to make money off of when that's what you do, because you have a whole lot of friends, you know, and a whole lot of time because you're awake. And so, like, literally you're like, oh, I'm going to sell this quarter ounce, you know, and then next thing you know, you just barely have enough to re-up and you've got like four people. Anyway, I always felt like I was bringing the party with dope, right? With meth. And so then I got this great idea that I should start selling heroin, because I didn't give a fuck about heroin. Like, I had a gram and I had $100. Boom. Like, what else could I say that for? So I started selling heroin, and, but I'll tell you, I became really close with some heroin addicts, and, because it becomes very familial. It becomes very, you see people every day, man, that can't string together more than $10, and it just breaks your fucking heart, you know? And I, for the first time in my life, I started feeling like I was killing people. And I'm really thankful that that happened. You know, I wasn't thankful at the time because it really kind of, it frustrated me because, you know, I was trying to be this, you know, this person that didn't care, and I did care, and it really bothered me. On February 12th, 2015, my house was raided. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with Houston, but I lived at the corner of Gulfton and Fountain View. Oh, yeah. And, let's just say that there was a lot of dope in the house. There were guns in the house. There was a lot of stuff in the house. But come to find out, my house was raided by the postal police. Did y'all know that was a thing? The postal police is a thing, and it's the feds, and it's for real. And so I'm like, I literally, first of all, I get home and like, holy shit, I have a whole different color front door. You know what I'm saying? Because my door is black, and I get home and it's that fresh wood, you know? And I'm like, ooh, that's not my door. And I sat there in my sleep deprived, you know, trying to figure it out. And all of a sudden I'm like, holy shit. And then this lady named Lupita comes running out to me, and she's just like, Kyle, the police were here and they took everybody to jail. And they said you were a drug dealer. And I told them that couldn't be true because I didn't. Well, I mean, I was, but they weren't there for the dope is my point. They were there because the guys that I was living with were stealing shit out of mailboxes and then getting the account numbers and then making checks and then sending a crash test dummy to the fucking check cashing place or whatever. And so I didn't know about that. I really didn't. I worked, you know, I mean, I barely worked, but I worked. And I worked enough so I could get on people's bonds is how I worked. And that's why I worked. So they wouldn't take my shit away if anything ever happened. So my point is that I am, but it's but for the grace of God and probably my grandmother in heaven, and that I am standing here today. Oh, and the fact that I'm a white woman. I'll be real upfront with that. That I'm standing here today because that apartment was in my name. The utilities were in my name. I was on that lease. That was my abode, but I literally did not know anything about the check stuff. I just didn't. And so I was able to have plausible deniability. You know, well, why do you have a whole bunch of mail in your apartment? And I'm like, well, because I'm a dumpster diver. Like, you know, maybe I get mail sometimes. And that's all they needed was something that they could grab onto. But what was really uncomfortable during the questioning was the fact that they knew my kids were in Travis County. The fact that they knew that my first husband was in prison. They knew a lot about me, and it made me very uncomfortable. And so I decided at that point, well, guess I need to get some help. So I would love to sit here and tell you that, like, I got clean for my kids. But I didn't. I got clean because the Harris County Sheriff's Department strongly suggested that I get to Travis County because there wasn't going to be a technicality like that a second time. And, you know, of course I was evicted. So I started living, with a trust fund baby that I sold GHB to, for a couple, months. 'Cause you know, that's what we do. And, ended up checking myself into Harris County Psychiatric Center and, then got to put in Volunteers of America. That's in Fifth Ward, Houston. And I never thought in a million years that I would find God or that I would find sobriety in Fifth Ward, Houston. I didn't think in a million years, but there were women there that I was afraid of. And that didn't happen very often. There were women there that had seen some shit and they told me to sit my fucking ass down. And, they said, whatever you think is a good idea, you do exactly the opposite and you sit down and you shut the fuck up because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And I believed them. I was like, oh my God, you're so right. So I stayed there for about 60 days. I got transferred here to Austin Recovery. But there was they didn't tell them there was this like 10-day lag period. I managed to stay clean on my own, with the help of a pay by the week motel paid for by my husband. And I was able to stay clean for about 4 or 5 days, and then Cinco de Mayo came around, and then David and me and one of my old running buddies went out to have margaritas because I wasn't an alcoholic, because alcohol didn't get my shit knocked down, you know, didn't get me raided, my house raided. Guess what, guys? I'm an alcoholic because 3 margaritas later, you know, I'm like, let's go get some dope, because that's the progressive nature of my disease today. That has not always been the case. For years and years and years, I was able to, you know, weekend tweaking, we call it, where, you know, you just start getting high on Friday and you sleep on Sunday. And then that Friday turns into Thursday and that Sunday turns into Monday. And then next thing you know, you're just miserable 7 days a week. But my point is that I didn't think I was an alcoholic. And so one of the things that I like to tell people that I want to challenge all of you to think about is whether or not you're an alcoholic. Even if you're here because of crack or heroin or methamphetamines, alcohol for me is something that that was always there when the dope wasn't. It went away immediately as soon as I started doing dope again. I didn't have a problem with alcohol, you know, because I would switch because I didn't want to fuck up my high. You know what I mean? But up until that point, I was a horrible alcoholic, and that was very difficult for me to admit. So, you know, I got to Austin Recovery, and I was scared to death. You know, I was fresh off a relapse, fresh off a Mother's Day I didn't know about. You know, I had, my mom had lost some faith in me. David and I had relapsed together, and it was not a good time. And so when I got here, I had, you know, I'd been up for about 7 days, but before that I had a good 45 to 50 days of another treatment center in me. So I knew it was possible. But what I loved about coming here was there was like yoga and freaking acupuncture and a buffet. I was like, what the fuck? You know, I had been at VOA, which where we shared our premises with TDC. You know, so I lost weight at my last freaking, you know, treatment center because, you know, y'all, cheaty seafood is no bueno. And so I'm just saying when I got here, people weren't shoving stuff down my throat, you know, and I was so thankful to actually be able to like choose this way of life. And what I saw was I saw alumni coming in and people, you know, I like to joke, but what I love is whenever women come in and like they have earrings on that like match their bracelets, you know, or just jewelry in general, because like my jewelry was long gone. And I was just amazed, you know, at that point when I was here, I was struggling with fucking brushing my teeth every day, y'all, for real. I'm not kidding you. I was struggling with taking a bath. Like I was struggling with depression. I was struggling with my head. I was struggling with everything I had just not to walk out that front door, because they're real upfront about telling you, you know, that door ain't locked. You know, and it's not, and but I really did want this, and especially because everybody in Houston was going to prison, you know. So I was just so thankful to be here. My my daughter was extremely angry at me whenever she got here. Obviously, my daughter today is 18 years old, so she was 15 when I got clean, which means she was 15 years of me not well. You know, 15 years of me choosing men over her, of me choosing dope over her, of me choosing money over her. She was very, very damaged. And we used to have family therapy out here. And it was so weird because I'll never forget, my mom and Jasmine came once and like we're going around the room and there's like 50 people in there. You know, it's like, hi, I'm Jane. I'm here for my mom. Hi, I'm Joe. And I'm here for my aunt. Hi, I'm Jasmine. And I'm here for Kyle. Man, I knew at that moment, dude, that I had some work to do, you know? But that statement has stuck with me for this whole entire time, because you know what? That is exactly who I was to her at that moment. I was just a name. I wasn't a mom. I was Kyle, you know? And it really set me up to know the work that I had in front of me. But I was so thankful whenever I got here that... I was just so thankful that my daughter was even coming to this thing, even though it was kicking and screaming, you know? So I got out of treatment. I got into a sober living home. You know, I went to an Oxford house because that's all I could afford. And they basically, you know, I couldn't believe that they gave me a spot when I didn't have any money. You know, I didn't have a job. All I had was 30 days worth of sobriety. And they said, okay. And I was like, really? But this bitch in my head had told me the whole time, like, you're a dumbass. Like, oh, like, guys, I don't know about y'all, but I have this bitch in my head. I don't know, maybe y'all have a dude in your head. I don't know, but I have this bitch in my head who tells me things. She doesn't talk to me so much anymore, but man, back in the day, she'd be like, you're a dumbass for fucking going to that interview. Like, what a, like, I can't even believe you would think that those women would let you in. You don't have any money, you know, because you don't have anything to offer them. I didn't know what a real freaking, I didn't know what real friendship was. I didn't know what stepping out on faith was. I just knew I didn't have anything that you wanted, and I was dispensable, you know, and that wasn't the case. And so what I loved about getting into that sober home was it made that bitch shut up for just about a week. Because that bitch was like, damn, they let you in. Who'd have thought? And, you know, but what I'm trying to tell you is that was that first little step out on faith where I walked through that fear and where I said, bitch, shut up, you know, and I went and I did it anyway. And sure enough, it worked. And what happened was I noticed that the more I put one foot in front of the other, the more that shit would happen. Like, it was so crazy. It was like the more, you know, like my daughter was so freaked out. Like, when I got well, one of the best pieces of advice that I was given was, you know, your kids need totally different things from you. So spend time with each of your kids separately, because your older child is going to need something totally different than your younger child. And that was such great advice, because my daughter, man, I will never forget, like, the first, I mean, we were just like gangbusters. The second she got dropped off, it was just like we had never been apart. As soon as she saw that I was really doing what I said I was doing, that I wasn't just full of shit like I had been for so many years, the second she saw that I really was in a sober home and she really did have to watch me pee in a cup, she was like, hey, can I come spend the night? Because her and my mom were about to kill each other. So I got, it was so funny. My mom told me once, she says, I'm so glad you got clean when you did. She said, because the gun was in my mouth. She did. She's like, because it was about to go down. And so anyhow, my daughter started living with me at the sober home, and it was great, you know? But my son was a completely different story. So my son, when he went to live with my mom, was four. And so you can imagine being separated from me and his dad for, you know, over 2 years at the age of four. He comes over to the house and he's like, where's grandma? When's grandma coming back? You know, why am I here? Where, you know, I mean, he was just super, you know, I don't blame him for being suspicious. You know, it's only been very recently that he even trusts having people in mine and David's lives over at the house, because we did not have the greatest picker when it came to friends. Like, we weren't the greatest people, you know what I mean? So, but today he really trusts, you know, the people that we have in our lives, which is awesome, because that has not always been the case. So basically my whole thing today is that I'm so thankful that I have my family restored back to me. You know, I say this quite often, that my higher power stage name is God. So, I'm so thankful that, you know, that my God dropped all charges against me when I got clean, and, that I am absolutely able to start off on a clean slate. I really do feel like this is a second life, because I really don't feel as though I was living ever, you know, whenever I was using, whether I was, you know, making it, you know, just like barely making it, but I wasn't really living. I didn't have joy, you know, I didn't have happiness. I just had like one day after the next, because I would get home and I would drink till I passed out. That's just what I did. So I just want to, for those of you guys who are like just trying to decide whether or not to like keep up, you know, with this way of life, it really does get better. I mean, it really does get better, because a lot of times people are like, you know, oh, once you've been clean a year, you've done everything once, you know, you've had a clean Christmas, you've had a clean Easter. I'm 4 years clean and I'm just now starting to fucking get together with these like holidays. Like, you know, I mean, because I'm just starting to feel the true joy of Mother's Day. I mean, last Christmas was the first time I really felt the joy of Christmas. So I'm not going to sit here and say like everything's roses and, you know, after your first year, because my brain was, I used every day for a really long time, whether that was alcohol or meth. I was using something every single day. And so it has taken my brain quite a lot of time to kind of unravel and have kind of a new experience. But I'm so thankful that I am, you know, walking this way of life. There has been a lot of good things that have happened. You know, I got a freaking job. I've always worked in the legal field. And whenever I got clean, I didn't know if I could work in litigation, because a lot of attorneys use drugs. And I was always that person that was able to get attorneys drugs, and I didn't think I could work for lawyers when I got clean. So I got a job driving a bus, but while I was waiting to take my CDL, I was trying to make some money, and I went to a legal search firm and I just went, hey, I've got 23 years experience, but I don't want to work for lawyers. And she's like, do you know where you are? This is a legal search firm. Like, what the fuck? Like, what do you mean you don't want to work for lawyers? I'm like, I'm just saying, you know, because I knew that's what I needed. I didn't know why I needed that. I just knew that I needed something different. 3 days later, I shit you not, the phone rings and she's like, you are not going to fucking believe this. And I go, what? And she goes, there's this land planner that works at a law firm that chews people up and spits them out. she's been through 4 assistants in the last 3 weeks. Do you think that you could handle her? She's not an attorney. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I still work for her today. Because I'm like, chew me up and spit me out. Are you kidding? Because, you know, let me tell you, once you've lived a life with an ounce of dope on you at all times, anything is pretty much easier as long as you don't have dope on you. It's easy, right? People are like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe your car broke down in the middle. I'm like, I don't have an ounce of dope on me. I'm good. You know, I'm totally good because I can go through some shit. So anyway, I'm really thankful today that, you know, that I've worked for the same company. You know, they're super, they didn't know that I lived in a sober home whenever I got there. And there was a lot of awkwardness, you know, asking me about my kids, and I didn't know what they were doing, you know, and they were like, well, what school, you know, what's your kids, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, and I would just make shit up. And so, cause I didn't know, you know, I'm like, I'm just trying to not use dope. And I finally was able to get real with the people at my job, you know, and tell one person like, hey, this is where I'm going. I'm going to a meeting every day because of y'all people, cause y'all make me crazy and I'm trying not to drink today. And, but it's really cool because when I first started working there, people would drink on the job all the time. You know, it was just common. And, today they don't, you know. Today they don't. And I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, that's because I'm not cool with it. It's because they realized it wasn't cool. You know, they realized that, hey, if we're going to be, you know, it's probably not a great idea to offer the new girl whiskey on her second day, you know. And so I'm really thankful that, you know, we had a luncheon not too long ago and like my whole job was there. It was so cool. So they're super supportive of my recovery. And I'm pretty sure they're going to ask me about their kids coming here at some point. And, pretty sure. And you know, the cool thing is I'll know what to say, you know, I'll know where to direct them. And that's the greatest part out of all of this is that, you know, I try to be more of a lighthouse today than that orange cone that David talked about earlier. So anyhow, if you don't know whether or not you want to do this or not, please know that if this were even as close to hard as my life was 4 years ago, I wouldn't be doing it. My life is so much easier today. My priorities are so much straighter today. I actually can fall over at the end of the day knowing that I did my best and knowing that I didn't hurt anybody in the process and knowing that tomorrow I can try to do even better. So, really that's as simple as it is for me. It's really not that difficult. I'm not special. Like Chris says, you do what I do, you get what I get. And that's just that's the equation that all of you guys need to pay attention to, because I am not special. I just put one foot in front of the other. And that's all I've got. Thank you.